received the presentation on the state of readiness and the issues that will be discussed in COP 17 in Johannesburg. South Africa has got some proposals. A few of the proposals on moving of the K Mountain River, transferring it from Appendix 1 to Appendix 2. The wild ginger to be included in the Appendix 2. The pangolin to be moved from Appendix 2 to Appendix 1. Some of the proposals. But of course, honorable members are free to engage. There is a question which is still outstanding, and I don't know what would be the proposal from the side of South Africa on the decision-making mechanism, which was decided some time ago that the Secretariat would develop this mechanism at the end of the 9 year, as the 7 or the 9 year moratorium which was imposed on the sale of ivory. So I don't know what is the view from the side of the Secretariat. Is there anything that is coming regarding this decision-making mechanism and how this question is supposed to be addressed? Because as a result of the decision that was taken some time back, there was an allowance of once of sale of the stockpile that other countries have, particularly South Africa. Because I see there is a growing lobby for banning of the stockpiles, which is something that also came up very strong there. IUCN, where there was a strong lobby for destruction through the banning of the stockpiles. And yet there is that outstanding decision-making mechanism which the Secretariat to the scientists are supposed to present. Can we get some views on that? On the Rhino Lab, I am of the view that this question, because of rhino poaching, must be elevated to a national crisis, because it is, taking from the presentation and how it has been affecting even the private rhino owners or the owners of the private conservation areas. It is something that has to be attended to, and I don't see a proposal of coming up very strong to elevate it to such levels. Even on the prosecution side, there is a proposal for legislative amendments. My view, which I've articulated earlier, is a move towards minimum sentences, which, if possible, the Criminal Procedure Act could be looked at in terms of amendment to be able to accommodate for that specific purpose. Those are just my views. I don't know what is the view of the department, if they would comment on that, Minister. Yeah, colleagues, we can take questions and comments on the presentation that has been given here. So we say we are going to allow honorable members, but also allow everybody else in the House to engage with the presentation. I see there is no one who's not taken up with the honorable Edwards. Honorable Nyan, Honorable Kekana. Honorable Manolet, Makuhela. Anybody from the invited guests? Honorable Mabi. Don't feel intimidated by this environment of Parliament. You can engage in the debate. We've opened up for, okay? You come after the honorable members. Yeah, can we start from the...
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Edward. Okay, first of all, I think for the colleagues that know me, probably saw how excited I was with the app that's going to be used inside these. I'm really excited to see that and how it's going to work. I think the committee can learn something. I'm teasing. I'm really excited, lead paper, et cetera, et cetera. I would like to ask, though, whether it's going to be available on all software, Android, iOS, et cetera, et cetera, as well as how far will the app be used instead of paper, just a little bit more detail, specifically. And then I just have a question for clarity. Rhinos are, okay, I'm still trying to understand Appendix 1, Appendix 2, et cetera, et cetera. So rhinos are under Appendix 1, right? 2. Just I was under 2, but not internationally 1. Because what I'm actually trying to ask is that if Minister, you said that there's a possibility, maybe, at 5E, that we will ask them for trade, you know, with the, when it comes to the horns. Yeah. So how does the trade in the animal differ from trade in the stockpile, the rules? And if we do trade with a stockpile, a solid or whatever you want to call it, how will we regulate this specifically?
Thank you very much, Honorable Nyami. If you can be brief, so that we work within the 30 minutes that
we're here for. Thank you, Chairperson. It's only 1%. Maybe one, we have to start by welcoming the presentation and have the knowledge of these things of trying to put in. My question, Chairperson, is that although we can see that this year, the statistics have come down or decreased, but that strong law enforcement in national parks shift in the attention of process to permit rhino reserves and vice versa. Now, how do you ensure that this doesn't happen in this park? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Kika.
Thank you very much. And thank you, the Minister. My question is that to the minister, that the statistics on rhino poaching that is being released by the minister, including rhinos that are killed in private prisons,
so the statistics relating to rhinos killed in private reserve.
Answer, Chair. Firstly, let's welcome the presentations on by some of them, but just two quick areas for one to understand. In the first presentation, you alluded to the fact that there's been interaction with Southern African countries as well as Africa, and some consensus generated. May I just find out whether in the proposals you are making, whether moving this particular species to the first or the second appendix, whichever it is may be, are we going to be supported on all those? Or there are challenges in some of them? All I'm saying is, can we be assured that getting to sites, Africa or Southern Africa is moving as one? Is that what you will say? Of all directions? And what could be those? Because I think we could be able to deal with that now. Whether it has been presented or not, Chair, you pardon me if I am referring to something that was not presented. In one of the presentations, there has been interviews with Clintons, with poachers, and so on, and they're indicating their own views around why they get into this business, the incentives and all that. And then another presentation, or the last presentation made here, there are issues as to how to incentivize communities so that they don't necessarily think this is lucrative business to do the illegal, which is a major problem. And I see most of the issues we have are more Christians than others. We still have got more Christians than being provided with what should be done. Because that will happen beyond CITES anyway, because we're not dealing with CITES to necessarily conclude on many things. But I think those interviews show that we've got major problems on our hands. If you were to go through that chair, you'll see that we've got serious problems. I love the chair, and I'm sorry if I've gone too far. There's an international ban on the trade, rhino trade, and we're still working on the strategy of rhino management and all that. But we are encouraging the private owners to keep rhinos in their land or farms, which sort of militate against doing business. If you've got a ban, but you must farm in rhino. If I were to be encouraged to do that, but I won't be allowed to trade, is there no contradiction? What is it that I'll mostly benefit when I don't trade in? I know that the moratorium was necessarily imposed for certain things, but I want that to come clear out. If I were to encourage other people to farm in rhino, but at the same time there's a ban, you can't do trading in that horn or whatever. I think you're getting the frustration I'm trying to throw to say more could be that.
Thank you very much, Anas.
Oh, sorry, before. Honorable Pavio, I forgot about you.
Yeah, sorry.
No, thanks. I would have some of the presentations, especially the first one by the minister. But I've read considerably on the subject itself, the worldwide, CITES COP17. It's regarded in at three levels. First, it is regarded as the largest ever CITES COP to take place. That's the first thing. The second one, in terms of its 43 years of existence, is regarded as the most critical. Thirdly, there is a growing level of interest. Now, I'm inquisitive, Honorable Minister, to say, why? And what are the expectations? I know that Father apologized for the presentation, but what are the expectations? Maybe you have addressed that before I came. Those will be my first questions on the first presentation, which I missed. The second one relates to the presentation by the doctor there. I picked up page 7 and page 9. The poachers' activities are increasing. But despite all other efforts undertaken, what I don't get is that there is no deterrent. My concern is that there is always no deterrent. So the poachers are always emboldened, they are determined. And it seems that's where we are who are not seeing it. Now my question would be, what are the contextual factors that contribute towards that aspect? Why are we not seeing matters, I mean, poachers be discouraged or being fearful? They are rather important. The last matter will be around the decrease. You say it is affection. Why are we not eliminating? What are the reasons why we can't eliminate this phenomenon? We decrease it in affection, but we can't say completely eliminate the onslaught. Lastly, it will be around the stability. We say we stabilize the position. My own view is that the emphasis should not be on stabilizing. It should be on having the upper hand. Because if you stabilize, you are maintaining the status quo. They die then this year, next year, so it's a pain. So I want us to move, my last, and I want us to move from this aspect of stabilizing and ensuring that we have the upper hand. That was my last year. Thank you
very much, Dr. Salet.
Thank you very much. I've got a question to the Panajaina Owners Association. I just want to know more about the transformation in your sector. Could you maybe give us a bit of an overview of ownership patterns, how many companies, shareholdings, and also black-owned rhinos, and whether there's been any initiatives at the custodian program and community empowerment from the private sector. Thank you.
And lastly, Honourable Khadev.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm really sorry for being late. I missed a very important part of the session this morning. Chair, I've got two questions. One relates to the set that was received, was presented by the Minister with regards to the rhino poaching in the country. I see, according to the report, there is a slight decline of 17.8% on these cases that we have in the country. But I'm really worried if we still have 458 rhinos poached in our national parks. It seems we are missing the point. Why are we not doing it correctly? What is it that we are not doing correctly? Because it's still a high number. 458 rhinos in our own parks, it's not acceptable, to be honest. Because we are still dying. Like Honorable Mabilo said, why are we not in control of it? They must be at least if they are getting a report, at least two or three. It's acceptable, but not another rhino that needs to die in our park. I'm really concerned about that. We need to really look at our strategy and see where we are not doing it properly. Is it maybe because there is a domestic, we are allowed to do this trade on the right horn? I don't know. We need to look at other options because it seems not on. And we'll be still losing rhinos. The second part, I don't know whether it was presented, is about the country's position on the ending of listing of the elephants in the country. That was proposed by France, and 55 NGOs, Sri Lanka and other countries are also supporting that as well. So I would like to know what would be our position in the country. Are we in support of it to end the split listing and putting all elephants on up in Swan? I think that
would
be it. Thank you.
The last part of the question is that Sri Lanka and they are supporting what proposal?
They made a proposal to say is to end the split listing. They want all elephants. There is also a coalition, an African Elephant Coalition. It was also supported by Sri Lanka, France, as well as 55 NGOs. They want to end this split listing of the elephants and put all elephants on appendix one.
Okay. In the total ban of, say, domestic and international. Okay. You're already answering, Minister. So, no further takers? Okay. You can start continue answering.
Thank you very much. We always start at the beginning, less than attempted to say what I said off-line. I'm going to ask some of my colleagues to come in and have this response. Because as part of our duty, I also thought that we should really be being at a colloquium like this, as you said earlier on, getting much more in discussion. And therefore means that there should also be suggestions. And there should be some proposed positions and so forth. But I think we can do that later on. Chair, your issues, firstly, decision-making mechanism, Tia will talk to this latest consideration that which we may use as a, how shall I put it, a tactical approach, a strategic approach. Is embodied in here. But the decision-making mechanism issue, there has been no movement since the time after the decision was made. And it was for that reason that we decided that South Africa and I think Namibia would then put a proposal on our own, because the teams that were set up by SciShift after the agreement, after the resolution was made to have this decision-making mechanism did not move. We don't quite know whether it's because of interest or it's because of lack of time or whatever. Either as it may, for whatever reason, we thought that then we should rather put this proposal, and we drafted the proposal, which we think would need to be discussed there. But as a part of the tactical approaches, that's perhaps and maybe the decision to speak to, because I'm not even sure whether this is actually the right order for now. But this is an effort that we think that we could use for trade-offs and things like that. Then we'll stop bias. Yes, indeed, there is a growing campaign, or rather the lobbying around banning or stockpiles or whatever. Let me just start by saying there has been banning of stockpiles in different countries, especially on the continent in the past. Is there anything scientific about this? That if we ban stockpiles, poaching will go down? Has there been a decline of poaching in the past when the stockpiles were banned? I don't know. We still see the rate going up and up anyway. What we think is that, like we are doing here, there's a need for complete overall consideration of several methods and mechanisms to be applied in dealing with issues of poaching. And those are around your issues of law enforcement, issues around corruption. You need to do all those things. Issues around managing your own populations, good conservation management, and a whole host of other things that I'm not mentioning now. And in this whole combination of all these things, a combination, I dare say, of all of them, will probably give us the results. And that combination means even the complete elimination of what we call the real syndicate. Now, let's not forget that these syndicates that we are talking about are syndicates that operate in human trafficking, they operate in drugs, they operate in all sorts of things that are worldwide known today that are actually a problem of the world, not a problem of South Africa only. Syndicates that have nothing to lose. Syndicates that are considered of nothing. So we really have to fight these syndicates with all the might that we have and closing all the loopholes, including the legal aspects of our work. I'm just saying we need to look at that. So banning of stockpile alone will not stop this thing. Unfortunately, some of our fellow countrymen who are banning stockpiles, they say they do it as simple that maybe this will discourage those who are poaching. I don't know about that. We haven't seen that happening, especially in those countries where they've been banning them for a while. now, to date. It hasn't happened. If, in case, it says, if they haven't read quite looked at holistic measures of stopping rhino, if whatever poaching happens, they will keep on banning every year, we believe at least, that and have will not be helping us to realize this result. There's another thing linked to banning. There's one minister on the continent who has this situation. And she announced this week that they are going to ban the stockpiles. And then I took a bilateral with her to say, what is it that makes your countrymen to ban the stockpiles? She says, we actually don't have elephants. We ban stockpiles elephants. We don't have elephants, we don't have even one in our country. And yet we are always found with stockpiles of elephants. Because we find them in communities, in society, which actually these people who are coming to the city are using our own society and our own part of nations to actually break the morals of our country and morality of people who are just selling, who are getting into this selling of things that they don't quite know. So they're becoming part of smaller aspects of communities themselves. And then she says, when we confiscate these things, we are supposed to store them somewhere. And in storing, you have to ensure that the safety, it cost, and so forth. We don't quite understand why we must spend money on saving and storing ivory that's not even part of our country. And you ask next door other countries who have elephants, they say, no, we don't have it. This has actually resulted in us then, at this last Amsterdam African Minister Council on Environment, we have asked that we tabled a proposal which was agreed to South Africa and Namibia, working with other countries on the continent. We are working on a proposal that will be tabled at Amsterdam of coordinating our stockpile storage facilities capacities so that we at least do data banking. We know each country is known to have whatever we have, so that at least if each country knows what you have is from the database, it's probably DNA and so forth. These ones that are operating outside will be able to then know. And if, for instance, the stockpile ends up in Zambia, in Botswana, we may know that this part comes from South Africa, this one comes from wherever, so that you manage these things together. So those are the areas related to stockpile management. The issues around rhino left share and poaching, and that you suggest that as we elevated national prices. We do think that, I mean, let's just take 2009, 2010, very few people, especially in the security cluster, would be very supportive of the work that we're doing now, 2009, 2010, 2011. But now, it's no longer that case. That is no longer the case. It's actually the security cluster itself that has really said that we are at the forefront of this thing and we want to work with you, actually not just you, to lead a formulation of a national strategy that's integrated on the rhino existence. The economic cluster has done the same, and the some departments like social development and so forth have also come on as part of supporting the strategy. So I'm saying relatively speaking, but also that the president himself has made pronouncements, has moved in into this area of there. So, to a large extent, I think, even if we're not calling it a crisis, because calling it a crisis is another story, people have actually responded, including our treasury. The fact that we've been given money for the past few months to increase the ranger community, we've been given money to increase the security assets, defense itself at some stage was upset about to pull out of Kruger National Park at the borderline, and they were given further support to help us in the Kruger National Park. It might still not be enough. By the way, there's a lot of money that we're also looking forward to increasing budgets. I don't know if we'll have that money. But the other thing is the next thing that I want to talk about. I didn't quite understand the question. Pardon me if I missed out the real meaning. From Honourable Member Edwards, is the issue of availability of the, was it the presentation, this one, or was it issues around the whole coordination of the COP?
Yeah, the proposal is that The cup is going to be paperless. It's going to be a green, green cup. Yeah. So I think a question was around that, whether...
I'll ask you to speak to that.
Availability of documents.
Yeah. Maybe I should talk to this issue. I think it came from both Honorable Edwards and can't remember who, or yes, Honorable Macaulay. What has been banished is the harm. We still do have life rhino. Right now we also have, as we speak, just about a few weeks ago, requests, and some people were caught dino. Some relocated them to zoos, some established their own branch states and so forth. You know, of those that were translocated from here to Botswana and so forth. So we do that through proper permission, but not the horn. The horn is banned internationally. We put a moratorium on the domestic one. Meaning that we're saying if this horn is banned internationally, what would still be the value of trading on it locally? There are questions around that, as I said earlier on, that we are working with our private rhino owners regarding that, because there are instances where some of them are saying that they need for ornamental sales and so forth. But it's really things that we have to engage on. But linked to that is the fact that we must all know as a country what is the stock level that we have in country. The government-owned stockpiles are audited annually, they are known, but not fully audited. We have the private sector ones. So we need to have, like if you own a shop, you must go and sell your shop. You can't not know how many tomatoes you may have to make a profit. You have to know, and you have to keep that stock level known. So it's for that reason that we had started before this call, that we should do also the data banking of the private owners' stockpiles. Unfortunately, we did not finish this in time. I'm not sure if we're finished even now. Not yet finished. Ready for site. Because had we gone to site and say, we want to trade out, where is your stockpile? How much is it? Where is it for? Do you have data back and so forth? And we are not ready with that information, unfortunately. So you also don't want to create your head banged up against the wall when you know that you are walking against the wall, deliberately losing yourself. So we need to know all those questions. We need to have intelligent answers for all these questions that we are going to be asked. By the way, may I also indicate that we understand exactly the plight of the private owners, the kind of difficulties they are going through. But the difficulties, much as they are for private owners, they are also difficulties for the country itself. We are all leading, and we need to work together as fast as possible to really get our act together. And that's very, very important. Now, we are not necessarily going to submit, not even necessarily, we are not going to therefore submit a proposal, Madam Edward, at COP17 for trading. For these reasons, there are five things that we have to get our act together on. Mention the stockpile, mention the partner issue, who are you selling to? Is what was going to be asked. Is it Vietnam? Is it which country? Is there possibly going to be demand stimulation if once you open up and sell? Look, there's going to be some, and what is this animal, lacuna. There was a moratorium lifted, and prices agreed on the sale, but there was a partner on the other side, known. Say we say Vietnam is the partner to sell, so too. Who in Vietnam? For what use? And so forth. Because there are several uses that that we are being. Is it ornamental? Because we are there also in our analysis, it's ornamental sales for the, you know, the kind of ornament keeping. That one is priced in elastic. No matter how much the price is, people will always pay. But for the medicinal and others, is it really sexual? Is it, some of these things that are medicinal, it's just like, perhaps only like if you ask me that, a Christian like me, that you believe that Jesus Christ died on for your sins. If I say yes and somebody wants to convince me otherwise, the answer may never ever be convincing. So it's that kind of a deep-seated belief that some people are using the medicinal, before medicinal view. Would we ever convince them, this generation in particular? Perhaps we should work on other fellow following generations to come. But for now, the generations that are there do believe in the thing. Even if you tell them that this thing doesn't work, I don't think they will hear us. But we must find energy for that reason, that in our effort, we actually, among many other things that we're doing, we are working with nations like Vietnam in terms of ensuring that, because we don't speak their language. They've been here three times, three different groups to come out of here and go and do social media campaign for us of demand management. That we need these people to understand that it is not, it is actually bad to kill a rhino as it does happen in South Africa now and elsewhere. So that campaign is happening of demand management. It is probably still not at the level at which you want it to be, but it's, and welcome there, let me also answer for try and answer the questions by Honorable Mavilio and Honorable Khadem. These kinds of initiatives, by the way, it's not like if you say you're taking this bottle and putting it here, and it's done. It's like if you are saying to South Africans, rape is bad, and we arrest people every day for rape with sentences, minimum sentences are given, and for battering women and so forth and so forth, you don't get them converted tomorrow. So it's a real fight. It's a real fight which we want to have done by yesterday. But unfortunately, even with all these measures, Dr. Ferreira introduced other measures, that disruption of the criminal syndicate, which is your pillar number four that we have on that one of those slides, which is what the security club is now helping to move in. Because in some instances, some of the people who unfortunately walk at night into a private own reserve and kill seven rhinos, let me put an example of those ones in Northwest, just recently on a farm. Seven of them, one night, when we investigate, we find out that actually they've been here for nights and nights, just doing reconnaissance work, and being assisted by some of the people in this vicinity. And it's for that reason that we've got to work with our people, never for them to allow such things and for them to be used. So they've been walking around doing reconnaissance for weeks. They shut in one night and shot at seven. They moved. When they get chased, we find that the horns have been moving hands to hands and for a police following them. When they get into the airport, into the aircraft, South African police can't follow them. We need Interpol. We need IQIC. So those other bodies have to move in, and in a big way. We have just now gotten them in. Well, we're there. I've gone to Singapore last year to participate in the IQIC meeting, in the Singapore meeting of Interpol, to really encourage them to work with us in a big way. So trying to get to deal with other answers about why it's not just easy to eradicate them today. Remember the beliefs of people, the money involved in it, the syndicate nature of these people, and so forth. But we are really fighting. I think that the fact that we are now beginning to realize a downward trend. I would be worried if last quarter of last year, or second quarter, and last but one quarter and last quarter of last year, there was a reduction, and this year there's a shooting up. It does mean now that you indicate that there's a downward trend. And we need to establish that trend. It must go down and down and down. Especially because last year, 2 years ago in 2014, Dr. Ferreira, we were told by our countries that if the rate of poaching goes in the manner in which it's going, the mortality rate, also normal one, is at the rate that it's going, the death rate is at the normal rate that it's going, we could now in 2016 be breaking even and beginning a downward trend last year. So our scientists actually indicated that to us, but then at least there's a swing, a bit of a downward trend. We are not celebrating the downward trend. We are just saying it is happening and acknowledging it. Ours is to collectively drive, remember? For honorable members, each of the communities where we live, we are honorable members, we should also be part of ensuring that our communities are educated every day. And I like what's happening in KwaZulu-Natal of late. The communities around that area are conscientized fully, but whether they can be able to help us contain is another story. But they are really working. And people have now come in to be conservators, monitors, and so forth, from a community point of view. And I think that then it also deals with the question about Osnambi, about the strong enforcement that we have. I think to a large extent that's right to come in as well. Statistics, the release that includes the private rights. Yeah, I think you'll deal with that. The issue around intervention with private freedom and Africa in the proposal making, Honourable Makwe. Yes, there has been, and I think they can elaborate, maybe I shouldn't even try and leave that question for you, dear, which also sharing. We have this thing of interviews with kingpins or understanding how the kingpins work and the community involvement and so for these questions. If you realize and remember actually what I said, we are talking about these things where we referring to the Rhino Lab report. Remember, the Rhino Lab report is a kind of a plan, 3-foot plan of what we must do. And therefore, it started by doing a different analysis on what fuel are using these things for. So the discussion of the King James issue is about. So the right left plan is to be implemented fully in its entirety. You remember when we did Ocean's Economy, we started with the left as well. So it's a plan of integration of who must do what for us to be successful. And if one of us does not act, we go to that person and say, what is the problem that we're not realizing? Because all those things put together, they will help us deal with this. If anyone, one or two of the people just relent, then will not be good success. So it's a part of a plan that reaches up to 3-foot level. So it's not only about crisis. It's going forward to show that we continue deliberately as an effort to fight this kind of coaching. International ban, working on a strategy to encourage private funders. I think we have dealt with that. What is a lifeline and the this honorable Madilo, I think I also try to touch on your issue about why are we talking about decreasing and so forth. We've got to be very realistic. If we today say we think to South Africans that there will be a complete eradication like tomorrow or when I think we will not be fully honest to ourselves. Because we know the kind of challenge that we are faced up with. Reduction must be, could actually even mean reduction up to zero. But eradication, if we use that word eradication tomorrow, you will come back and ask us, but why didn't you eradicate? You said you are going to eradicate. Whereas we are not fighting, we know what we are up against. So eradication, no. Stabilization of the population, Dr. Ferreira will talk about that issue. Decreasing can be decreased up to zero. But I think we need to use the right words at any given time. Issue of the transformation, I think your private sector operation will talk to that matter. And then honorable stage about, I think it's a signature that I speak to. Uplifting of ivory. No, elephants in particular. It's about what, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago? The rhino specialist, elephant population group, what is the statistics that were released? What is that group you will deal with at that? Specialist group, did work on South African elephants. Our population of both lion and elephant, actually we have overpopulations on elephants. Somebody was saying at a place to disappoint. You don't want these things to be thrown to take them to some place. I think it's in Ado. We have overpopulation, Botswana has got overpopulation, Zimbabwe has got overpopulation. But there are countries in the world, especially on the continent, which have got population problems because they have higher poaching numbers. We have higher poaching numbers in Rhino, but our population is still not so badly. So bad population energies right now. Badly affected, yes, but it's not completely down. And we are fighting, we will not relent in fighting. So So on both the lion and this, when your population is, and then another country, Sri Lanka, that doesn't have one elephant, then put a proposal to say, Sri Lanka has one. And they don't have elephants.
They are not the African elephants.
Yeah, but they want the African elephant to be put on a British one, and they don't have an African elephant. What does this mean to you as a world? When we are saying South Africa has an elephant, you can't go ahead and say we have to do that. I think it would be incorrect. So we look at all these things. Who, what proposal, say what? Yeah, I think that should give it there.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. Whoever is going to come, can we just do it in 5 minutes? Everybody is going to act. Who's the next one?
Here we can a lot more as well, and Kishan on the state issues. But I think on the biological, I think our colleagues at the back will also assist on that one. Mine is a quick one. The Minister has done justice to all the questions. But I just wanted to emphasize the point, especially with that relates to appendices and the list, that in the main, when we engage our counterparts in the continent, there are 5 things that keep on coming. They talk about their populations are affected in the main by conflict, could be general conflict, wars and other things. They are affected by human wildlife conflict interaction, which creates a challenge. Even Kenya is challenged with that. Habitat loss, and also in the main, lack of enforcement. And then they are also challenged by some other socio-economic issues as developing countries. Listing does not deal with these issues. So we need to be very clear. People sometimes talk through this emotionally than being informed by real facts and scientific facts and also issues on the ground. So someone will come in, the gay parrot is going, and in our country it's because we are losing the habitat. But once it listed in Appendix 1, there's no correlation between the two. So you will get a lot of those things when you're dealing with species. So I just wanted to raise that, because there was a question that was asked about how as a continent we'll be approaching this. We do have consensus on many issues. There are some areas that here we talk to where we don't have consensus on. In the main, because we've got different contexts, I think Minister has indicated on lions and elephants, the numbers in Southern Africa are different from numbers in Central and West Africa. So how do we deal with that situation? So you won't have consensus. Those people who are coming, those 27 or whatever number in the coalition, now the number is punted as 55. I don't know why 55 comes from, but you get those numbers. But there's a coalition. People will say, this is it. We just want it happening like that, with no regards to the context. The reality of the matter is that those that are managing and staying and dealing with these lions or elephants would have a better way of providing what works and what doesn't work in the best interest of the survival of that species. But the system inside is worked the way it is, to the point where even those who don't even have anything can say, want something in South Africa to be listed wherever, and then it's voted for somehow. And there are those aspects that need to be considered in the dynamics. But we know our story and our context.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to brief. Just in terms of the decision-making mechanism, as explained by Minister as well, it comes from 2007, the 14th CRP Society, where we agreed to a 9-year moratorium, but it was linked to further conditions, including the development of a decision-making mechanism for the process of trade in ivory. In addition to that, also development of an African Elephant Action Plan, which was agreed at the COP15 by all the African elephant range states and that we are already implementing, as well as continued monitoring of issues like illegal killing of elephants, as well as the elephant aid information system. So of all the elements of the compromise that was negotiated at COP14, this is the only element that was not delivered yet. It's supposed to be finalized by the 16th COP society, so the close in 2013, but there was insufficient progress. So it has experienced a number of delays through the year, but it seems like there's just no firm commitment to actually come up with a process. So it says it's not that we will trade tomorrow. We're saying that we need to agree what are the conditions and criteria that must be met for trade to take place, especially for countries that do support sustainable use and are conserving their inhabitants and their populations are growing and increasing in numbers, and the wildlife policies provide for sustainable use. So we want to know what will be those criteria that must be met for us to then engage in terms of international trade. So the document that South Africa, Namibia and Zimbabwe proposed set out that criteria. So we said if these criteria conditions are met by the arrangement, and if the following criteria and conditions are met by a possible trade partner, then the standing committee of CITES should be able to evaluate whether it's been met and authorize the trade to take place. So that puts in place a mechanism towards trade. One of the key challenges has been that the milestones or the goalposts keep on shifting. So there's no surety in terms of where we are moving towards, and that is what we wanted to confirm through such a mechanism. So in terms of the app, it will be available on for all firms, on iPhone, and download it. It's also on, you got it? Okay. So they're busy populating us as winning. Okay, so they're busy populating it, so you'll see some of the buttons are not, doesn't have the supporting documents, but that is the whole purpose of the app. During the COP, intention is then to not make a file available to people, but to refer them to the app. And even intersectionally, you'll see there's a button for intersectional documents, so even those documents produced during the discussions and negotiations, those will also be loaded here. So we don't have to print for all the participants that will be coming. The only challenge will be if some of the participants are technologically challenged. So I hope we will be able to address that. And furthermore, we can make devices available. So if you do not have a device, you may have a very old phone, we will make devices available online so that that is also covered. So we're really going all out to make it as soon as possible.
Thank you. We make devices available. So we'll give people the smartphones.
Unknown, it's unknown.
Okay.
And I'm sure it's just you took out insurance, or in case the loan becomes a permanent. So.
Okay.
Then just quickly, in terms of the discussions at static level and Africa level.
I think you've answered it, and the minister. It's fine. Thank you very much. DG?
Just, thanks, Chair. One question that was not answered by Honourable Emanilo on Dutch F. Makubes around the how do we incentivize communities? And that would also link to the question to the private rhino owners and us, if you can then allow those three to come in to answer. Let me just indicate that in summary, we in the rhino lab, there was a work stream that was focusing on communities, community empowerment and socio-economic activities that we need to initiate to make sure that we begin to really incentivize communities to have the pride of conserving the species, whether they are plants or rhinos, but definitely rhinos immediately. Secondly, we had, the first slide of the presentation of the Rhino Lab indicated that we had already undertook a biodiversity economy lab. In the biodiversity economy lab, we had a work stream that was focusing on wildlife and a work stream that was focusing on bioprospecting. In both those work streams, there are various initiatives that are focusing on how we are going to empower communities around protected areas, both to contribute to conservation, but also to benefit from the goals, whether they are animal-related benefits in terms of wildlife, or whether they are plant species that get exploited sustainably. So we have zones around Limpopo and all the provinces. Currently we are discussing in those pockets of land
whether we can, what would it take us to then make sure that we both put in place the basic infrastructure, whether it's fencing, before you can give donation of game. So there are already game donation policies that have been produced by the various conservation authorities to then help to populate those, but also to make sure that the habitat is going to be able to handle whatever introductions that will be made, whether big or small species. Harvesting of indigenous resources to enable limited exploitation of what is already available in the wild in terms of making sure that there is long-term sustainability of some of those. We've already outlined what species are available, where we have a list of 20 that has been prioritized from the bioprospecting and component of the lab. So we will present to the committee in details in that regard, but there are initiatives, and the dividend press conference will begin to also have further engagement on exactly how communities around protected areas would enhance their conservation strategies and empowerment. Thanks, sorry for taking them up.
We're running out of time. A little bit time schedule. Douglas, if you can just come in.
Thanks, Chair. I think that the transformation in the private sector can be divided into two areas. First of all, we're a membership-based organization. I've been trying to get the statistics that you've requested, but with no luck on that front. I think to look at the wildlife writing in two separate sort of camps is, one is to look at the slide that Dr. Pereira put up with the rhinos with the feed burnt behind it where the animals are ranched essentially, and then to look at particularly within transformation to look at the land claimants that are in protected areas. So we're getting two different types of transformation models in that. The one that you see that is directly linked to wildlife ranching, which is the ones that I can talk of, and I'm sure that the NEC for the Northern Cape will also know the Kamani Strang project that wildlife ranching is directly linked in, along with various other pilot projects, primarily in the Limpopo and Northwest provinces. And then obviously the large number of land claimants in KZN in the property adjacent to me in Eastern Cape, where those people have rhino on land that they now own. So we're asking growth in pure ranching, but we're not seeing that specific to rhino. As I said in my presentation, rhino are not considered to be very lucrative species to have on your property at the moment, so people are going for some of the other wildlife species, but we are seeing rhino particularly in already proclaimed protected areas. That answers the question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think we're done.
I just want to make two quick points. I think that we need to remember that the CITES is a demand management instrument, international demand management instrument. And before 2007, for rhino, it worked. It contributed to the success that South Africa was having. But since 2007, something changed in the international market, and it no longer worked. And that's what the integrated plan is all about. The response is, why is the CITES model no longer working in this particular context? Lots of reasons, like Southeast Asia, China having more disposable income and things like that. The second point I wanted to make is to just be very specific on how communities benefit. The benefits that accrue from conservation activity to a large extent can be divided into three parts: products, live animals, and then the tourist or non-consumptive use, tourism trade. So within the product area of benefit, you get horn, ivory, bone, meat, hide, pharmaceuticals, herbs and spices, building materials like thatch, fuels like charcoal, wood, and your indigenous knowledge systems, indigenous knowledge, IP value. And the problem that you have is if South Africa takes a position on banning trade on high-value species, high-value trade on high-value species, you're taking away that benefit that you need, that Dr. Ferreira's work has shown, that there are two key areas of intervention we need. One is disrupt the international syndicates, and the other one is benefit for the communities. And so one of those, which is benefit for the communities, CITES has a risk of reducing the benefit if we don't approach it carefully.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we've not really exhausted the issues, but at least in a way interrogated the issues and received some responses. The minister, I think, would have been better even if we ourselves come up with a proposal which can contribute towards the reduction of the rhino pollution, but also the proposals which South Africa can look at to take to the CITES even at this late stage. Hopefully at the end we'll be able to do that. But I think that we are looking forward to participation in the CITES. We have been invited, the minister has invited us, we are going to come participate there in whatever way that will be determined by the program, by the portfolio commission, and we will be there to be part of CITES. It's quite interesting how countries which don't have certain species become advocates of how those species should be traded. So we'll see what happens there in Johannesburg. Because I can tell you, Minister, when we were there with the show there, there was a strong lobby around the complete ban of domestic trade in ivory, which was being pursued by some of the NGOs which were there. But there was also another issue which I'm sure you have been briefed around, of the Panthera leo, which became a serious issue there. I don't know whether it's going to be raised. Probably it might be raised also at the CITES, that people have taken some position around it. So we're looking forward to participating there. And of course, we'll be guided by the South Africa position as to what needs to happen. But thank you very much on this part of the session. I forgot to congratulate you, Honorable Minister, on your conference of being an honorary doctor by the University of Value University of Technology, in contribution to the role that we are playing in the environmental and conservation sector. We thank you very much. We'd like to extend our appreciation and thanks as the portfolio committee. Don't know whether to call you Dr. Muleo or must use the title. Okay, honorable members, we are left now with the panel discussion. I hope that the panelists are ready to make presentations. we'll have Nicholas Funda. Maybe we should start with you, and then from there, Dr. Shaw, and then Anas. Okay. I'm told there's a problem with the project, and I'm just no longer. I don't know if it is over or left.
I've got a printer to talk to my friend.
Yeah, but I think it has been distributed. No? So yeah, we'll just follow it through the slides that we've distributed. I hope the other presenters also got their own slides. So we don't really need the projector, we can go through the slides. don't know the time and occasion, we only have the 30 minutes or less, if we can say 20 minutes.
Thank you, Sir Christian, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I will be very quick, Sir Christian.
You might have to, because you don't need the projection there. You might speak from the podium there.
I hope it's working. I hope you can hear me. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to my story. I will try to be very quick, and my talk is titled Rhino Poaching in Kruger National Park, Successes, Challenges, and Pitfalls. I think it's important that one talk about Kruger National Park, because that's where the country is leading in terms of numbers of animals that are killed. And firstly, I must give you the context of what is Kruger National Park. It's almost 2 million, it's 1.9 something millions. I don't want to use those numbers. I think after Sam's talk, you are bored of numbers, so I would try to use words. About 1,000 kilometer boundary that you have to manage in Kruger National Park. And we have two international boundaries that we have to deal with, Mozambique and Zimbabwe. We've got the Lebombo Mountains range in terms of your response and operations. Those are the sum of the challenges that we have to deal with. 1.7 million annual tourists that we get into Kruger National Park. Therefore, whatever you do, you must know that the tourists that are paying to come to the park, that are paying my salary, therefore we must look after those people. Not everyone that gets into the park is a poacher. Some of the people are paying my salaries. Sam is paying more than 15,000 elephants in the park, plus or minus 8,000 rhinos. We've got millions of hectares of alliances. We've got land that is incorporated into the park without paying a cent. I think that's a positive thing about the rhino. We have private sector saying it's better to do it together rather than doing it individually as private land owners. Those private land owners that are close to the park, on the western side of the park, and the eastern side of the park, including Mozambique, are saying, God, we're doing exactly the same, it's better to drop the fences. Therefore, it's an expansion of protected area without paying a cent. Because our challenge was that if you are an neighbor, you are becoming the weakest link. We will have to fence you off and improve your security. And therefore, we want conditions to become part of the park. Some desperate cultures today in Kruger National Park. We have divided the park into two based on the concentration of rhinos. City Z, Composite Protection Zone, and Joint Protection Zone, we call JDZ. And the last one is called the Intensive Protection Zone, it was called ITZ. based on the concentrations of rhinos in the park. The more rhinos we have in the zoo, the more security is required. We've been asked to talk about success. It's not only the bad thing, we also asked to talk about the good thing that we are doing. The mission area, our joint operations center, is a success story for us because for the first time we have army and police and rangers standing together to deal with the poacher in Kruger National Park. When different countries visit us, like Namibia, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and said, guys, this is not common in the region, to have different forces working together. We got it right for that. It's through your support and more especially minister. We work closely with Mozambique, as you know that we share boundaries with Mozambique and Zimbabwe, but mainly Mozambique because of the vastness of the area that we share with Mozambique. The Transfrontier Park concept that we are part of it, most especially in the Kruger National Park on the Mozambican side. We help them as well in terms of resources and funds, but also they help us with housing in that side. In South Africa, we've got partners, most especially the JPZ, the Greater Kruger Environmental Protection Alliances, the private reserve on the western side of Kruger National Park. And we also have provincial reserves like Mthaba Ranch and Manyeletsi from Mpumalanga. Mthaba is in Limpopo and Manyeletsi is in Mpumalanga. On the southern part of the park, on the Crocodile River, we've got the Komansi Interest Group. They are organized, they help us, they know how we operate. Critical is an integrated training. There's a saying that if you don't plan, you plan to fail. Planning together with these different forces is critical. Because we don't want to see a situation of blue on blue. For those that come from Ireland, they will understand when I talk about blue on blue. That is critical that we plan together. They know where we are, they know where we operate, and we know their capacity, and so that we don't shoot each other. The minister has been talking about the national crime coordination. This national priority crime on wildlife crime is championed by the Department of Environmental Affairs. Ourselves are part of it, private owners are part of it, and cooperating private security industry is represented as well. In addition, we've got the SSA, which is your security, South African National Defence Force, South African Police, South African National Police Service, SARS, Justice and Home Affairs. We've got all these partners. It's critical. One will argue saying, why Home Affairs? If we work with different countries, they are border control that we have to go through, and Home Affairs is responsible for that, and therefore we have to work with them. Justice is critical. We can arrest poachers in the park, hand over to the police to manage the dockets. But the last state department is justice, to look at sentencing the criminals. If we don't work with them, I don't think we'll be successful. There's no correlation to provinces. This includes, we as the department, is looking at supporting this national coordination at provincial level. Because we have realized, what if we strengthen our campaign in the National Park is going to suffer somewhere in Natal. It's going to suffer somewhere in Free State. It's going to suffer somewhere in the Eastern Cape. Not necessarily only in the public sector, also in the private sector. Therefore, we need to have a strategy that is going to deal with that. I think the department is doing an excellent job to do that. Mobilizing of finances, technical and technological capabilities. The most important thing is information and data analysis and management. People are always complaining that we don't have intelligence in our country. I think we have too much information in our country. The challenge is how you analyze the information that we have and how do you collect the information. I mean, we've got social media, we've got all sorts of things, we've got cell phones. God, we need analysts that are going to help us understand the trends over time. What is happening, where they can come up. There's a dedicated level coordinator. that will coordinate all of these things. Rhino poaching in Kruger National Park. There are some steps. The minister released steps on Sunday. And it's always good to look at a trend over time. We started seeing a drastic increase in poaching in 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014. And we are seeing we saw a stabilization for the first time in 2015. And we projected, I think the statistics from the minister, we projected that we will be less than 2015's figures towards the end of this year, unless we got surprises. The job that we're doing, you can get surprises within a day like that. They can kill many rhinos. You always need to be on your toes all the time. Your intelligence and your analysis, they must help you. The most important thing that has really helped us is cooperation. If you are doing it your own alone, I'm telling you, unless you have a deep pocket, if you have a shallow pocket like some of us, you are not going to succeed on your own. As I said in my introduction, we are part of the Greater Limpopo Transmedia Park, and for the first time, I think the rhino has played a role being a catalyst to make sure that the Transmedia Park works. We meet every day with different structures, different committees, but operations committee that look at operations, what are the issues at operations, and it's really working for us. Incorporating the private sector into this campaign is critical. As I mentioned, the Greater Kruger National Park, Kruger Environmental Asset Protection Foundation is helping us around different provinces that we work with, Limpopo and Mpumalanga. And Mozambique Limpopo National Park is our key partner. There are initiatives in Mozambique. The private sector is coming in terms of the Mozambique concessioners. And we have joint operations between Mozambique and South Africa in terms of the Ligombo project, and it's working very well. But there are some challenges that we have to deal with in terms of support in Mozambique. Logistic support, fuel, traveling, all those things, it's helpful. We are receiving on a daily basis proposals to solve our problem in terms of technology. Everybody's coming up with technology that works in Europe, that works in America, that we can solve this thing tomorrow. Today is the truth. And we have learned the hard way of saying, prove to ourselves that it has worked in Africa. It has worked in Kruger Park in the low fares under those challenging conditions. Because, one of the things that we need to understand is that Kruger National Park is not your friend. It's not a friendly environment. Size is a challenge. 2 million hectares is the size of Israel. There are 4 helicopters. I think if you Google and check how many helicopters are in Israel, I'm telling you there will be hundreds of helicopters. Therefore, we manage a country, actually. The temperatures in that place in winter, in summer, can get into the 40s. That's a challenge that we have to deal with. And in some of these people that have developed technology somewhere else, not necessarily not an MSP, they think they can resolve all these problems. And you said, can it work under these temperatures? You said, no. Therefore, it cannot work. And some people are coming up with certain technology. Well, we are spotting all the crime in Cape Town or Johannesburg. But how many things move in the Kruger National Park? You've got animals that move. You've got animals that have a shape like a human being. You've got to respond to baboons and monkeys, thinking those are human beings. What are the challenges that we face? I think that the question I'm trying to answer is, why are we not successful? Those are the challenges that we have to deal with every day as organizations. But luckily, we have willing, capable, and committed rangers. And compared to other state agencies, I think we are better suited. And we can do the things that some of the agencies they dream of. What is our effort? Sam has shown you the graph where we're showing the high CVTs in the Kruger National Park and low random numbers that have been posted. That distance between the high and between the high activities and rhinos post in our effort, that's how we measure ourselves. If all those poachers were successful, the graph was going to be up there, even though rhino that have been posted. This is how we measure mount performance. This is how we measure my rangers. This is how we measure the police. This is how we measure the South African National Defense Force that is important. Circle is Nicholas breaking the map. I'm not breaking the map. I'm saying this is a map that is helping to understand my effort. Challenges and the obligations. I'm not going to highlight all the challenges and say how we are trying to address some of those challenges. Expected role of South Africa in the Greater Limpopo Transfrontier Conservation Area. We are expected to lead. And even at a local level, we are expected to lead. And we're doing that. Without us, I don't think there would be. We have seen a drop in Mozambican cases. They have shifted into South Africa. It's because of us and Mozambicans and facilitating that, creating that environment to be conducive for us to cooperate. We share radios, we share cell phones, we can communicate with Mozambique. Rhino and rhino outcomes increase in Kruger National Park. We are thinking rhinos. And the third thing, we have some orphans because those orphans, they don't have horns and the poachers are not interested in those young rhinos less than 6 months old because they don't have horns. And we have to deal with it. And the private sector come in to help us with that. And this is working for our trust. The private sector is becoming a rhino stronghold. Now, you want me to go and sit down and left with a few pages? Because if I have that TV or bifold, it will take forever. I'm in slide number 7. Page 7. The one that I talked about is a nice picture of that map, and below that is a slide talking about challenges and mitigations. Colleagues, for those that are coming from army, we deal with different options from security clusters. Those things need to be managed. The soldiers are operating in bigger groups, and we operate only in twos. And integrating that is a challenge. And it's something that we have to manage. Poaching, colleagues, is about people. Range awareness is important. We have seen some symptoms of stress-related things that is emerging from our rangers. As a responsible organization, we develop a range awareness program where they've got access to psychologists and even their families. We're not only limiting to our employees, their families is their problem, because these people some of them are married, they have kids, and the family, they can pick up all these problems. And we are saying to them, this service is available to all the family. The third thing that has emerged, I think you have seen it on paper, is when we started arresting our own. This is the saddest thing in my life in conservation, where you arrest someone which you think was going to take over from you when you retire, or when you resign, or when you die. And the next thing, you arrest him. The person we are, it's a fraction, it's less than 1% of the people that you are arresting. And they're called the traitors. It's like they're working for the enemy. And the other thing that makes me happy after that arrest, it happened on the 27th of July. It was my birthday. That was the worst birthday present got from rangers to arrest one of us. The most important thing is us who arrest these people. It's not somebody else. It's not the police. It's not armed. It's us. That shows our commitment. That shows that no one is above the law. Even if you are higher up in our organization, you will arrest. That's the message we are sending. The campaign is running out of money, more resources, it's not cheap. I think Dr. Mapunda yells that this campaign is not cheap at all. It's a very expensive campaign, we need resources. I think as a matter of schedule we have that we are lucky because we can even fundraise on the outside and get some funding. But once you start arresting your own, you sometimes you shake your sponsors. Managing the hotspot is important for both tourism and conservation. Colleagues, we had an incident in January where a poacher tried to hijack a tourist. Therefore, we are dealing with things we need to be able to balance, to make sure that the tourists are safe, but at the same time, to be harsh on these poachers. That's a balance that we have to keep, and it's a challenge that we have to deal with. What are the pitfalls? I call it what the lessons learned, whatever we learn out of this. Poachers shooting at our own helicopter. There are two incidents this year where the poachers had to shoot us from the helicopter. Can you imagine if they managed to succeed in doing that? But thanks God, we are lucky. When they're shooting the arm, we have ranger at what was ground, but just south of Olipons, who was shooting the arm. And touch wood, we have not lost a ranger through a poacher. That shows our training, that shows our commitment that we have not lost a ranger today. Communication and messaging, Simmons highlighted, I'm not going to go into that. I think the message is, we always said, it's not about numbers, but if you look at our presentation, it's all about numbers. Maybe we need to start thinking about our presentations, not focusing on numbers, focusing on other schools. Sharing information and then we learn with public and private sector. The habitat for rhino is sitting in a protected area, it's sitting out there. And I think the initiative of the department to address this thing is critical. Because as I said, sometimes we become risky to get into Kruger National Park. That's what we are getting, that it's becoming risky to get into Kruger National Park. Because of the tools that we use. Frederick, we understand our tools. You can talk to me about those tools. I don't want to reveal some of the tools that we use to deal with the problem. The challenge of balancing conservation of wildlife, SDG, and rhino and elephant poaching is a challenge that we have to deal with. We are a conservation agency. We are not managing only rhinos. We manage pangolins, we manage vultures, we manage geese, we manage rivers, we manage everything in Kruger National Park. But the change in focus is focusing on a particular species. We ignore other species. The snaring that is happening in our parks is something that we have to deal with. Drought arises. We're in a drought situation. There are some advantages and disadvantages. One of the advantages is that if we follow a score, that's a South African term for a check. If you follow a score, we're used to that. If you follow a score during dry season, the score lasts longer. There's no rain to take a score away. You can follow that score for a long time and maybe you can get a culprit. The visibility is good. You don't have dense vegetation. That will also help us to maybe to end these things. But also in terms of conservation, I think this is exciting. Rare species like pangolin that we are seeing in the park, but some people are poaching those pangolins as well. Therefore, still a responsibility of the ranger to address that. Vulture poisoning is a disaster. For me, a bullet is better than the poison that is put on an animal, because how many animals are going to eat in that poisoned animal, and those animals are going to go and drink in a dam or in a fresh water point, and some of the animals are going to go and drink there. There's more damage to that. You lose more animals with poison, but threat maybe you're selecting to take one or three animals. It's something that we have to deal with as raiders in Kruger National Park. We have to deal with poison, we have to deal with poachers, we have to deal with elephant poaching that is starting up on the northern part of Kruger National Park. So that's in conclusion, I've made people a point. The rhino protection campaign is strong at addressing the supply side. I think we need to look at the demand side. I think it's easy to look at supply side and measure and measure what impacts and measure the supply, but the demand side is still very difficult to deal with. I'm saying poaching is an ecological, security, economic and social problem. The security cluster is working to address ecological problems. I think we're going to need other clusters to help us move forward. Because the lessons learned from the security cluster and working with different people is helpful. it's time for other doctors to come and help us. We need more balance so that we address economic and social problems. We don't want to reinvent the wheel in terms of research and understanding. So we need to bring people that are experts that can help us. Your need bureaucrats, people from welfare, social classes, they understand how to measure those things. We don't have to reinvent them. Last but not least, the main drivers of coaching, etc. I think we are dealing with three things here. People can manage to deal. We're dealing with human beings that are greedy and the culture and some of them the ones who meet their basic needs. We're dealing with machines in the form of firearms. And we're dealing with money. I think if we can manage all those three things together, I didn't want to put a triangle as an academic, but that's a triangle. If we can try to break the triangle of those three things, I think we will be successful. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Funda. I notice you have presented your document in a very passionate way. I see a lot of passion in what you are doing and in the issues that you are dealing with. Thank you very much for that. We will have Dr. Shaw. Yeah, you can send it. I think Mr. Funda has already set the trend. Yeah, so you can help Pasho in going through the slides.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair, Mr. MEC members, colleagues, and all chief protocol followed. It's a real honour to be here and have this opportunity to speak to you today. And so I tend to begin my presentation to colleagues who may not have heard me speak before by explaining that I am genuinely proud of South African. I may sound as though I just arrived from England, but I've actually been living here for 15 years. I've been working in rhino conservation for over 20 years. So. And then I'd like to begin by giving just a very brief overview to the strategy that we follow at WWF South Africa as part of our five-point framework strategy for supporting rhino conservation, which is very closely aligned to the integrated approach of government and the output coming from both the Committee of Inquiry and the Rhino Lab, which has been discussed. So fundamentally, we work on biological management, on growing resilient populations, particularly of the critically endangered black rhino, through the Black Rhino Range Expansion Project, which Sam mentioned. And we fundamentally recognize this need for community engagement in a genuine manner, and that this takes a long time and genuine participation, but we're keen to work with government, with the private sector, and the communities themselves to really bring this about. The need for law enforcement support at a national level, and not just at the touching level, but focusing higher up the trade chain. Obviously, as NGOs, we have a limited role to play in this sector. We can't do law enforcement ourselves, but we stand by to support the agencies to handle that. Then, recognizing that this is a global challenge, that we sit in South Africa because the horn is moving around the world, and as a global network, we have the opportunity to work with our offices and our partners in other countries to support that. And then fundamentally trying to understand the root of the problem. What is the demand for horn? What are the opportunities for trade? So this is the framing that we come through. I just want to give a very high-level overview under these areas of successes, challenges, pitfalls, and to try and end on a positive note on the opportunities that we might be able to see to try and stimulate some discussion. So I think we need to start by recognising that it's success that has brought us here. South Africa has over 80% of the world's remaining rhinos. The reason why we are the focus of attack at the time is because of our success of the past. And I think we've seen remarkable passion and commitment in this country from government, from civil society, from NGOs, from private sector, rhinos were the media story of the year in 2012. We certainly haven't sat back and let the problem overwhelm us. So I think we should count that as a success. Our strategies have been science-based, innovative, integrated. There's been a lot of thought by a lot of smart people trying to really address this situation in a comprehensive and long-term manner. And I think this is the success we should be proud of. And as many people, there will be recognition. I think it's great we're all thinking in the same way. But this recognition of a broader challenge. Right, the horrendous rhino carcasses we see are symbols of these much bigger economic, security, ecological, social threats. So I think that's a success to count on as we move forward. So I agree, of course, with Minister that rhino losses of any number cannot be celebrated, but I do think we should be applauding Sandparks and all their partners for the numbers that they released at the weekend. A reduction in the number of animals lost should be applauded. It's a very hard work that's gone into achieving that. But people going out at night to protect our rhinos is a success and must be recognised. The increased number of arrests, also a success, and as flagged, it's not just an increased number of poachers who have been arrested, but moving higher up the trade chain, those who are moving horn in our borders, those who are trying to pass it out. Something we've been looking for, and it's great that we're seeing this. And at a strategy level, the national integrated strategy on combating wildlife trafficking that has been spoken about, I think this is a huge success for our country. I think only the United States is taking such a coordinated, crime-based, law enforcement-based response to wildlife trafficking at the moment. And again, the strategy is just the first step. We need to see it implemented to really have successes, but we should be recognising this as a success going forward. So if we start to look at the challenges, this image is actually the trade flows of illicit products around the world, and it's really just to emphasise how rhino horn and ivory from Africa feed into the global networks moving a lot of other products. But to me, and for many people, I think the number one challenge at the moment is the amount of funds available to fight this threat. And it is an extremely expensive challenge to address, and we are limited in the resources available to do that. And we need to keep thinking about and looking at opportunities for that. But perhaps we maybe need to prioritise where our focus goes, which ones are the really important ones to us. Who can't we lose? Many people have picked up on this, but there's this well-known balloon effect. As we have impacts in Kruger and Swede in there, the threat moves elsewhere. We've talked a lot about Kizerland and Eastern Cape, the Free State. And across South Africa, we're seeing these networks moving. And sadly, last year, although we saw a stabilisation in numbers in South Africa, there was an increase in Namibia, there was an increase in Zimbabwe, and of critically endangered black rhinos there. So a challenge for us to work together and try and resolve. So a few more challenges, and a big one for us. Again, one that has been mentioned a lot, but this need to resolve some of the relationships between rural communities and protected areas, and not in a light touch, lip service kind of way, but in a genuine long-term recognition of some of the challenges of the past, recognition of some of the deeper governance issues, the loss of economic opportunities, and the crime issues that are becoming embedded in these countries. In the people coming from the trafficking network. I believe Aneta will pick up in detail on some of the community work, but it's great to see it being such focus of attention in the community of inquiry in Rhino Lab and the government going forward. I've flagged corruption. Again, I'm not the first. Mr. Fuller spoke very movingly about that. But for my part, I'd like to recognise that corruption is just a South African issue or an African issue. It's a global issue. We see it in our banks worldwide. We see it all over the place. And particularly from what I've read, where transnational organized crime networks are involved, when this amount of money is being moved around, then these things are going to happen. And so perhaps we should be acknowledging as successes the instances where our own are arrested and you know, not be embarrassed but weed out these issues. Yes, and yes, the revelations in a recent report around North Korean alleged diplomatic involvement in movements of horn, and certainly in earlier years, other countries, perhaps the Vietnam embassy seem to have been implicated. Now this is a very challenging one for law enforcement, but it's something that, again, we need to acknowledge and look at innovative solutions to address. So another challenge to put on the table. So if we move to some of the pitfalls, and I looked up this word before I put my presentation together to check that I was talking to the right thing. Pitfalls are hidden dangers, when you think you're doing the right thing, but something could trip you up along the way. And I think it's maybe important to acknowledge that because people are so passionate about this issue and putting so much effort in, it can become deeply divisive, highly contentious, and a lot of time and effort and energy has been put into arguments that haven't necessarily moved us any further forward by just coming on opposite sides. Sam mentioned, and many people have mentioned, the work of the Committee of Inquiry, and I think that brought us a long way forward in a shared understanding of what some of the basic steps are that are necessary, and that the response to this is more nuanced and more detailed perhaps than is often recognised. Perhaps something to keep on the table as a future challenge is future threats. As we move towards more intensive breeding of rhinos, with a focus on breeding specifically for the production of horn, yes, we can look at a diversification of approaches, but there are specific threats associated with this. We do need to make sure we can regulate and enforce and manage for those so that any such decisions are genuinely beneficial for rhino conservation generally. And I think this is quite an important one for me, that when we talk about community projects, we can't create any more expectations and lead to any more broken promises. Rhino farming, wildlife economy is being promoted as a solution for rural communities, and it certainly should be an option. There certainly should be access for people to become involved in this. But when we hear about how private sector are increasingly moving away from farming rhinos because of the financial implications, because of the security risks, I think it's disingenuous at best to promote it as a solution for communities. I think these things must be thought through very carefully. Other possible pitfalls, other hidden dangers that could trip us up along the way. Great to see these increased arrests, but they must of course lead to increased convictions. And we need to make sure we're supporting the NDA and the Department of Justice to follow that path all the way to conclusion. And one of my real bugbears is that this need for good law enforcement, not just in South Africa, not just in Africa, but in Asia. And the traders, the traffickers, the consumers in Vietnam, China are breaking the law in exactly the same way as rhino poachers are. And yet our standard response is to go and put up posters and to try and run communication campaigns to change that behaviour. But we should be seeing arrests. We should be seeing as much enforcement action coming there as here. And I hope that we can use ITES as an opportunity for that, as I'll come to. And just back to the previous slide on pitfalls, I think this has been picked up and I think there is a broader understanding of it. But trading rhino horn doesn't just mean everyone buying horn for the same reason, for the same purpose, for the same price, in the same place. It's again a very complex and nuanced market. And in order to try and change that behaviour, or in order to try and understand how we can best mitigate it, we need detailed research to understand whether people are buying for medicinal reasons, for investment reasons, for status reasons, and how best we can address what those consumers are looking for. So to end on a positive note perhaps and bring us back to the purpose of the discussion today, I do see PsycheCop as a great opportunity for Psyche that isn't actually just about listing or banning or not banning. And there are also a number of working groups and opportunities where the countries can come together and can be held to meeting specific deliverables. For example, Vietnam on changing their penal code, on making arrests of consumers. So I think we need to make the most of some of the really detailed opportunities that will be made available there. And also for the conference itself as an opportunity to look beyond the great work that we're doing nationally in order to get more collaboration and cooperation right along the trade chain to address the global challenge that it is. So thank you very much. I'll be open to any questions and look forward to chatting later.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Shaw. Thank you for your presentation. We are left with one last presentation. Annette, you will help me with your singing.
Yeah. Right, thank you. Firstly, thank you very much for allowing me to present to you, Honourable Minister, Honourable Members, all ladies and gentlemen, all protocol observed. My name is Annette Wittler. I'm also South African. I do have some German heritage, hence the funny two dots on the U. I came to claim the Rhino status that I recently completed a PhD that followed Rhino Gordon's Langling from the bush to the market. So I basically spoke to different actors and stakeholders along the entire supply chain, trying to understand why it's so difficult to protect the rhino. So what I have planned for my short presentation is to think a little bit out of the box in terms of the strategy. A lot has been said already, and to be making big strides in terms of dealing with the rhino issue. So the structure of my presentation is I'm going to briefly touch on the successes. I think most of the presentations have really shown immense progress achieved. Then I will add some of my insights from the research I've done just to show why, for example, community involvement and also the focus on organized crime are very important elements going forward. Another aspect that I want to touch on, which deals with grey markets, and you need to look at more legislative measures that the gap in legislation that allow some wildlife industry professionals and others to bypass our rules. This start with a sort of beautiful picture. The big successes that we have achieved recently, I think, is certainly that rhino catching has been elevated to a priority crime, and this happened quite a few numbers a few years ago already. The National Integrated Strategy to Combat Wildlife Trafficking has been mentioned quite a few times, and as we heard on the weekend, it was in the final process of getting authorized, which really is a whole-of-government approach to dealing with wildlife trafficking. We also know that the rhino numbers are stable. In fact, we might see decrease in rhino herding statistics later this year again, we're hoping. The arrest numbers are up, and like though, I also have to comment though, what about the convictions? Our conviction rates are not up. So it is great that we are arresting as many rhino poachers as we do, but this is only a success if you actually get them to conviction as the day in court. Also something which is really great is that we're seeing increased private-public partnerships. Not all of them are positive, of course, which I will come back to later. And it's really great that there are wider consultations with civil society. So for example, the new integrated strategy for some consultation with civil society, there's been running workshops, the RIM process. So that's really great in terms of the strategy. Also, big
big successes that we heard from Cyclies in a few weeks. Here my comment would be, of course, that we really should look at creating a greater cooperation across Africa. There is a strong Northern lobby and it will be important to come with an African voice against some of these proposals and uplifting and downlifting proposals. Now, challenges. I'm going to focus mostly on local interventions. So the first segment of the run is the supply chain and communities, as well as the wildlife industry and corruption. The pitfall that I've identified that I want to touch on is the messaging, the war rhetoric that is being used with regard to fighting the war against poaching. Let me start off, most of us know the DPCI levels of organized crime and rhino poaching. And at the moment, we know that mostly our law enforcement activities are at level one, the bottom of the pyramid. And it will really be essential to put a lot more pressure on level two and three. Level four and five, as the minister mentioned, we will need Interpol and international relations to assist us with. What we can do is we can deal with levels one, two, and three. And level one, we need to always keep in mind these are foot soldiers of the organized crime network. So if you take one out, they usually 12 to 15 others to pull in those. So it will be really important to look at the national runners, the buyers, the kingpins, and then those guys that make it possible that rhino actually goes out of the country. And these are, unfortunately, people that usually are in the legal sector. So it would be, for example, people in customs or in the wildlife industry. So these are really weak ones that we need to work towards. And the integrated strategy will be looking at that. So that's something to look out for. I want to give you a few sound bites from interviews that are conducted with rhino kingpins and poachers, and this was with convicted poachers in South African prisons. So part of my research actually involved interviews with convicted poachers in South African correctional services. And it's quite interesting to just gain an understanding what the drivers are and where we actually could do interventions. So, for example, Kingpin and Masinjia told me that he was... Masinjia is in Mozambique, so Masinjia is often described, and I don't quote me on this, but it's described as a poaching town, the biggest poaching town. But it's, you know, there are poachers living there, but it would be wrong to see the whole community as a poaching community. So this is just a... But this kingpin said to me that he was using rhino horn to free, well, he said we are using rhino horn to free ourselves. There are certain kingpins within that Mozambican area that see themselves as economic freedom fighters. So you will see a certain kingpins even parading with red berets. And so there's a very interesting point being raised there. Then a convicted horse smuggler told me, this rhino problem is because of conservation. They say that we need this thing, rhinos. They are nice. Some of the white people here treat them like their friends. They value the rhino more than black human beings. And now they see it as a business. If you have two rhinos, you are rich. This is a very important element which I will return to, because the sense of wild animal being valued higher than black wool life is something that we really need to consider developing our intervention. Somebody else, a convicted poacher, said to me, you see in the rural area today, and she was referring there to political and traditional leaders, used to call each other, and everyone that stayed there, and they talked with us to decide about things that concerned us. Now things are different, and they, and this is where he meant the government, put the president on the chair. They don't ask us anymore. They do things on their own. It's them that behave like they are crooks. That's why we end up killing the rhinos. And then a very young guy that I came across in Kupu, which is also in Mozambique, he was on a tour very early in the morning, and asked him what he was doing, and he said, well, you know, he just come back from partying, and he obviously had just come back from a very successful trip to Kruger, and he told me, ask you for the money. So that gives you a good idea of the drivers that Mr. Finn was referring to earlier. They're multi-layered. There are many, many issues that we have to address. And perhaps just listing briefly what I see as some of the motivations for purging or legal wildlife trade, but there are some people, of course, that purge for the cooking pot or the pocket book, so that's basically for eating themselves and also for basically financial gain. Then there's, of course, the question of demand, the existing orders, key buyers. There's also the issue of human-wildlife conflict that we touched on earlier as well. The very important aspect that we have to look at in terms of community intervention is that there is widespread unhappiness with the rules and income distributions and conservancies in parks. There's also a perception of unfair land use. Also, you have to remember that a lot of people have lost their hunting rights. And there's also been expansion of conservation areas into communal land and former hunting areas. And not in all cases has there been a proper process being followed, especially in Mozambique. Now, there's also discontent. There's, for example, some people that I've spoken to saw double morality that certain people are allowed to legally hunt, whereas when they hunt, they're seen as poachers. And there were concerns around militarization and outsourcing of regulation and enforcement to non-state actors. And here, there was particularly talk about certain anti-poaching units that were seen to actually be beyond the law. Right. Now, here are some observations that I want to make in terms of the messaging. In the media and a lot of public documents, we have often seen the messaging of a war on poaching and poachers. We have to tread very carefully because who are the poachers? Who are we trying to kill? There are people calling for sheep kill policy. So a comment on we need to frame our measures quickly. And there are interesting examples from war on drugs, for example, in the US. People were also saying, well, you're fighting a war against our own families. Let's look at a different rhetoric. So while law enforcement is certainly necessary, it would be best if we stay clear of war rhetoric. We're talking about fighting a war on poachers. And I also want to make a comment on some of the policies that seem to be offered, such as the displacement and the creation of buffer zones to basically assist rhino poaching strategies. We have to look carefully at whether this affects community interests. So, for example, along the Mozambican borderland, a lot of the former communal land is being privatized and changed into buffer zones to fight rhino poaching. The people actually used to have access to this land, and you possibly upset a lot of community members by telling them they can't make use of that land anymore, they can't pass through it, they can't hunt or pick medicinal plants. So we have to be very careful at what level these strategies are actually aimed at. Now, a comment on the rhino horn economy. We all know that there's a legal trade and a legal market actually in the rhino horn economy. So we have legal hunts that take place, and we also allowed to sell live animals, all of course under strict scientific regulations. But there is what I usually call a bit of a grey market. So there are sort of grey areas which we really need to start addressing. Just to give you an idea, the rhino horn economy, there are a lot of different markets involved with that. For example, you have hunting markets, you have transport markets, there's markets for medicine, for traditional Asian medicines, art markets, live animals, traditional handcrafts, forgeries, organized crime, luxury goods, horn paraphernalia. And a lot of these markets are put legal, but there's always a bit of a grey area that can be abused, and we need to really understand the involvement of all these different markets within the broader rhino horn economy. just to touch on some of the elements that we know about already, for God's grave laws, as flows, there was, for example, laundering of stockpiles or illegally hunted corn into legal flows. And a lot of you would have heard about the phenomenon of pseudo hunting, where people pretend to be hunters, but they were actually consumers or people standing in for consumers, and basically rhino horn was exported that way to consumer markets. There are several other loopholes, something which I call round tripping, which means that hunters from Europe, for example, or even from America, are stand-in hunters for consumer nations. So you have, for example, Czech hunters and British hunters coming to South Africa to hunt rhinos legally, but the rhino horn then would be laundered into illegal markets. And there's also, we need to look at the unregulated and undetermined terrain. There's, for example, huge amounts of fake rhino horn in circulation. And you have to have an understanding how the fake rhino horn market works. When I was conducting my research, there's actually a new job category in Vietnam. It was a rhino horn assessor, somebody that would test rhino horn for its authenticity. So it's an interesting aspect to consider as well. So the plugging of regulatory loopholes, grey markets, is essential. I saw that the Rhino Lab is definitely going to look at that. So we need to focus on grey channels and especially loopholes exploited by rogue elements in the wildlife industry. The wildlife industry often knows how to take legal rhino trophies out of the country, and we need to do our due diligence on who's doing what. And of course, the registration of private stockpiles is really important for this purposes as well. Now, in conclusion, a lot of people talk about the whole of society approach, which is needed to fight rhino poaching. And this is certainly needed, and it would be great if it can be implemented and with a new strategy and also in terms of the rhino lab outcomes. What we need to be cognizant of is that the history of conservation in South Africa has had quite a crazy past. Colonialism as well as apartheid, where people lost hunting rights, lost use, land use rights. It will be essential not to repeat the mistakes of the past, such as forced removals, or even employing the language of war when dealing often with our own people. Another observation is to render life rhino more valuable than a dead one to local people, because at this stage, certainly a dead rhino is worth more. And we need to understand what are the incentives for communities to turn a blind eye or participate in illegal wildlife economies, and incentivize the participation in legal wildlife economies as opposed to illegal ones. And the researcher, final parting word would be that we need a lot more research, scientific research, to be undertaken on all segments of the rhino supply chain. As Pio earlier said, there's a lot of research out there, often with vested agendas. We need scientific research to take a lot of our agendas forward. And just a few parting words. This is also from some of my research participants. Their solutions to the rhino crisis were quite interesting. Some of them were positive, some of them not that positive. I leave the slide up for you to read. Thanks very much for listening to me, and I'm very happy to answer any questions and look forward to our debate. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Annette, for the presentation. Quite interesting views coming out of the people that have interviewed. The kingpins, the runners, the poachers, and so forth. So, colleagues, we should break for lunch. I don't know whether lunch is ready now. Because we... let's pray for lunch. But I'm going to request that because we have got such a limited time at 2 o'clock, the members, including the minister, we should be in the house. The president is going to try to the questions. So we're intending to finish at 10 to 2. So if we can just do this a working lunch, or to give ourselves 15 minutes, something to eat quickly, and come back. If that's okay with you, members, can you adjourn us for lunch?
Thank you.